Welcome to the Word Theater Short Story Podcast, your weekly access to the best short stories read by great actors. My name is Cedaring Fox, Word Theater's founder and artistic director, and together with Kirsty Peart, UK founder and creative partner, we have been producing live events featuring great actors and authors, bringing short stories to life in Los Angeles, New York, and London for 20 years. In anticipation of the arrival of Brian Doyle's wife, Mary Miller, and his twin boys, Liam and Joseph, who are coming to Los Angeles for Word Theater's live performance of Brian's stories, taking place Thursday, June 1st, at the Grammy Museum Theater at LA Live, we are offering you five more stories by one of the best-kept secrets of the 21st century, Brian Doyle. Please join us if you can. You can read all about it, our wonderful cast, our world-class musicians, and you can pick up tickets at wordtheater.org/events. He writes with a delightful sense of wonder about everyday things and about love and connection in all their forms. So please enjoy this sampling on our podcast. With Memorial Day weekend upon us, we will kick off with Michael Norrie's fabulous performance of Brian Doyle's story, which is named after that complicated holiday. Michael performed this story beautifully the last time we were at the Grammy Museum at LA Live. Be sure to stick around after his reading and stay tuned for more stories performed by J.K. Simmons, Laura Sangiacomo, Don Norwood, and Bruce Valanche, all of whom will be with us live at the Grammy on June 1st. But first, here is Michael Norrie reading a Brian Doyle gem that was awarded a posthumous Pushcart Prize and published in their 2018 anthology, Best of the Small Presses. Here is Memorial Day.
We are at a parade. It is Memorial Day. I am sitting on the curb in front of the church with my brother, reserving our family's spot. The rest of the family is coming along slowly. Our father is carrying the baby. But my brother and I have run ahead because we don't want to miss a single soldier in uniform, or a girl twirling the baton, or a bespectacled, beaming, cherubic man wearing a fez. We might see an elephant. We will see horses and fire trucks. We will see politicians in convertibles. We will see men older than our dad wearing their army uniforms. Army is green, all the others are blue. Our dad will not walk in the parade wearing his uniform. He declines politely every year when he is asked. He says he no longer owns a uniform. He says he does not know where it went, although we think he does know where it went. He says he wore it only because there was a job to be done. And now that the war was over, there is no reason to have a uniform. He says, uniforms are dangerous sentiments, if you think about it. He says, uniforms can easily confer false authority and encourage hollow bravado and augment unfortunate inclinations and exacerbate violent predilections. That's how he talks. He says, uniforms are public pronouncements, like parades, and that we should be careful about what we say in public. He says we should be leery of men marching in uniforms. He says no one has more respect for members of the armed forces than he does, but that it would be a better world if no one ever had to take up arms, and that is a fact. He says in his experience, it is the man who has been in a war who understands that war is cruel and foolish and sinful, and anyone who defends war as natural to the human condition is a person of stunted imagination. He says a study of history shows not only that we are a savage species, but that we are a species capable of extraordinary imaginative leaps. He says that someday we might devise a way to outwit violence, as Mr. Mohandas Gandhi tried to do. He says most wars, maybe all wars, are about money in the end, and that when we hear the beating of war drums, we should suspect that it is really a call for market expansion. He says war is a virus, and imagination is the cure. Our father does not have his uniform anymore, but he does have a wooden box in a drawer in his bureau at home. There are medals and service bars and ribbons in the box. We have secretly opened the box, my brother and I, and handled its contents, and we put them back exactly the way we found them so that he would not know, but he knows. His photographs are in another drawer. In them, he is tall and thin and shockingly young. He is a private, a sergeant, a lieutenant. He is on Bougainville Island in the South Pacific, then the Philippines. He is preparing for the invasion of Japan. He's preparing to die. Today, he is standing next to us at the Memorial Day parade as the soldiers and sailors pass by. Some men in the crowd salute, but he does not. He keeps his eyes locked on the soldiers. Even as we are pulling at his pants and his hands and pant legs, and the baby is crying and wiggling, the one time he hands the baby and applauds quietly is when the firemen pass by in their trucks. After the firemen come the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts, the Little League baseball players and the Knights of Columbus and the Rotary Club. And finally, a visiting fife and drum corps from Ireland. Our dad carrying the baby who fell asleep just after the Girl Scouts walked by.
The next four stories you will hear were recorded at a benefit for our Word Theater in the Schools program, which we call Word Theater Campus. Brian and Mary Doyle came from Portland, Oregon to be with us that night. It was extraordinary. Nobody who was there will ever forget the feeling that came over the room with the accumulation of these beautiful works. Afterwards, Brian spoke so eloquently about the power of stories. I feel very lucky to have spent time with this man. Up next, please welcome J.K. Simmons, who will perform Illuminoi.
One child held onto my left pinky finger everywhere we went. Never any other finger, and never the right pinky, but only the left pinky, and never my whole hand. My finger misses her hand this morning. It has been many years since she held my finger. To this day, sometimes in the morning when I dress, I stare at my left pinky, and suddenly I am in the playground, or on the beach, or in a thrumming crowd, and there is a person weighing 40 pounds, holding onto my left pinky so tightly that I am tacking slightly to port. I miss tacking slightly to port. Another child held onto my left trouser leg most of the time, but he would, if he deemed it necessary, hold either of my hands, and one time both of my hands, when we were shuffling in the surf and the water was up to my knees, but up to his waist, and I walked along towing him like a small, grinning, chortling dinghy all the way from the sea cave, where we thought there might be sea lions sleeping off a salmon bender, to the tide pools where you could find starfish and crabs and anemones and mussels the size of your shoes. The third child held hands happily all the time. Either hand, any hand. My hands, his mother's hands, his brother's hands, his sister's hands, his friends, aunts and uncles and cousins and grandparents and teachers, dogs and trees, neighbors and bushes. He would hold hands with any living creature whatsoever without the slightest trepidation or self-consciousness, and to this day, I admire that boy's open, genuine, eager, unadorned verve. He once held hands with his best friend during an entire soccer game when they were 5 years old. The two of them running in tandem, or one starting in one direction unbeknownst to the other, and down they both went, giggling in the sprawl of the grass. It seems to me that angels and bodhisattvas are everywhere available for consultation if only we can see them clear. They are unadorned and joyous and patient and radiant and luminous and not disguised or hidden or filtered in any way whatsoever, so that if you see them clearly, which happens occasionally even to the most blinkered and frightened of us, you realize immediately who they are, beings of great and humble illumination dressed in the skins of new and dewy beings. And you realize, with a catch in your throat, that they are your teachers, and they are agents of unimaginable love, and they are your cousins and companions in awe, and they are miracles and prayers and songs of inexplicable beauty whom no one can explain and no one own or claim or trammel, and that simply to perceive them is to be blessed beyond the reach of language, and that to be the one appointed to tow them along a beach or a crowd or home through the brilliant morning from the muddy, hilarious peewee soccer game is to be graced beyond measure or understanding, which is what I was, and I am, and I will be, until the day I die and change form from this one to another in ways miraculous and mysterious, never to be plumbed by the mind or measures of man.
The third Brian Doyle story we have for you is called A Child Is Not a Furniture, and it is read by Laura Sangiacomo.
One time when I lived in Chicago, I spent an hour talking to a woman who was wearing a dress of the brightest red I had ever seen in all my born days, and I have lived 50 years. This was on the Cicero Avenue bus at 3 a.m. She said she was returning to the apartment where she lived with her husband. I inquired after children, and she said, "My husband and I are trying to welcome children, but as yet have not been blessed. Boy, I would like to have 5 children. I am myself one of 5. My husband, however, an only child of complex circumstances. He have misgivings and forebodings. There is also financial considerations, but there are a lot of considerations. I feel it is also spiritual consideration. My husband does not find a way to agree with this. He is a practical, pragmatic man. This may be because of his circumstances. For example, he say, "Where'd the baby sleep?" I say, "The baby will sleep with us." He have misgivings and forebodings. He say, "What if it is twins?" I say, "Well, then we'll be blessed by twins." He cannot arrive at agreement. Now, some people say I should just have the baby and then my husband will adjust to the baby. But this is dishonest. You can't be dishonest with your husband. Otherwise, why have a husband? What is the point of a husband if you're dodging the man? He is a good man, despite his circumstances. He has risen mostly above his circumstances, yet sometimes they drag him down. He measure and calculate. He arrange things just so. But you cannot arrange a child just so. A child is not a furniture. He says, "Who discipline the child?" I say, "We will do so together with the gentlest hand." He has misgiving. He worry things ahead of time. I admire the man fierce, but you cannot worry all the time. You must ford the river with your head held high. He says, "Where the boy go to school?" I say, "The girl will go to the best school available to us at the time." He says, "Money, money." But money, money is not the be-all. If it was the be-all, then what is the point? The point is what you do without the money. The point is what you do with dash and brass. This is who you are. You are not what you can buy. That is silly talk. He says the reason we are with each other is because I fire and he ice. Some truth to that. I zest him up, he calm me down. We fit together very nice. But in the end, two is just two. There is no place really to go after one plus one. At some point, you have to be more than two. Now, there are many ways to be more than two. I know that, and he knows that. But he careful and pragmatic. He take one step at a time, then look around weary for trouble. That is who he is. I cannot change him. I do wish a child is granted unto us. I would wish many a child. People say pray for the baby and the Lord will provide, but that is not how things happen. You do not ask for things and you get the thing. The Lord is not a suggestion box. That's silly talk. The way it is you dream a thing and work for a thing and make the way easy for it. And then maybe that thing be born. That is how it happens. Some things I do know. Here's my stop and I will depart. Let us shake hands. Ford the river with your head held high.
The fourth story we have today is called The Black Dog, and it is performed by the wonderful Don Norwood.
Driving through a dense, dark, moist night by the ocean, I asked my friend, "Hey, man, how you doing?" And he's quiet a few minutes because he knows, I mean, the black dog. And he wants to answer the unanswerable without lies, without the usual bob and weave and dodge and parry. "The tide isn't all the way out," he says. I trip over the dog. I carry a piece of paper in my wallet with all the names of the things I love. It's a really long list. The other day I got it laminated because it was getting all messy, you know? People must think I'm some kind of religious crackpot or lost in checking the directions because I pull it out all the time. But I sure need to read that map, you know? There's a long silence. Very long silence in the car after that. And then out in the ocean, there's an incredible moaning bellow, real loud and long. It must be a tanker or a barge or a ferry or something, and we totally lose it laughing. And then spend some minutes speculating that it's a blue whale passing a kidney stone. Or a lighthouse with major lust. After which, we spend the rest of the trip telling stories, which is often how we say the things we don't say.
Our final offering on today's podcast is called Cool Things, also a Pushcart Prize winner, and it is performed by Bruce Valanche.
As the fan's notes for grace and quavery chant against the dark and hurrah for the hustings, I sing a song of things that make us grin and bow, that just for an instant let us see sometimes the web and weave of merciful, the endless possible, the incomprehensible, inexhaustible, inexplicable, yes. Such as, for example, to name a few, the way the sun crawls over the rim of the world every morning, like a child's face rising, beaming from a pool, all fresh from the womb of the dark. And the way jays hop and damselflies do that geometric, arrow-amazing thing, and bees inspect, and birds probe, and swifts chitter. And the way the young mother at the bus stop has her infant swaddled and huddled against her chest like a blinking extra heart. And the way a very large woman wears the tiniest miniskirt with a careless, airy pride that makes me so happy I can hardly squeak. And the way seals peer at me owlishly from the surf like rubbery grandfathers. And the way cormorants in the ocean never ever get caught by onrushing waves, but disappear casually at the last possible second. So you see their headlong black stories written on the wet walls of the sea like moist petroglyphs. And the way no pavement, asphalt, macadam, concrete, cement thing can ultimately defeat a tiny, relentless green thing. And the way people sometimes lean eagerly face first into the future. And the way infants finally discover to their absolute agogishment that those fists swooping by like tiny fleshy comets are theirs. And the way when my mom gets caught unawares by a joke, she barks with laughter so infectious the people grin two towns over. And the way one of my sons sleeps every night with his right leg hanging over the side of the bed like an oar. No matter how many times I fold him back into the boat of the bed. And the way the refrigerator hums to itself in two different keys. And the way the new puppy noses through hayfields like a headlong, exuberant, hairy tractor. The way my daughter always makes one immense final cookie the size of a door when she makes cookies. And the way one son hasn't had a haircut since Napoleon was emperor. And the way crows arrange themselves sometimes on the fence like the notes of a song I don't know yet. And the way car engines sigh for a few minutes after you turn them off. And the way your arm goes all totally nonchalant when you're driving through summer with the window down. And the way people touch each other's forearms when they are seated. And the way every once in a while, someone you hardly know says something so piercingly honest that you just want to kneel down right there in the grocery store near the pears. And the way children fall asleep with their mouths open, like fish. And the way sometimes just a sidelong glance from someone you love makes you all shaky for a second before you can get your mask back on. And the way some people, when they laugh, tilt their heads way back like they need room for all the hilarity in their mouths. And the way hawks and eagles always look so annoyed. And the way people shuffle daintily on icy pavements. And the way churches smell dense with hope. And the way that men's pants bunch up at the knees when they stand after kneeling in church. And the way knees are gnarled. And the way faces curve around the mouth and the eyes according to how many times you smiled over the years. And the way people fall asleep in chairs by the fire and awake, startled and amazed, unsure just for a second what planet exactly they are on. Which is a question we should probably all ask far more often than we do. Look, I know very well that brooding, misshapen evil is everywhere. In the brightest houses and the most cheerful denials. In what we do and what we have failed to do. And I know all too well that the story of the world is entropy. Things fly apart. We sicken. We fail. We grow weary. We divorce. We are hammered and hounded by loss and accidents and tragedies. But I also know, with all my hoary, muddled heart, that we are carved of immense, confusing holiness. That the whole point for us is grace under duress. And that you either take a flying leap at nonsensical, illogical, unreasonable ideas like marriage and marathons and democracy and divinity, or you huddle behind the wall. I believe that the coolest things cannot be measured, calibrated, calculated, gauged, weighed, or understood, except sometimes by having a child patiently explain them to you. Which is another thing that should happen far more often to us all. In short, I believe in believing, which doesn't make sense, which gives me hope.
We hope you have enjoyed these five stories by Brian Doyle, performed by Michael Norrie, J.K. Simmons, Laura Sangiacomo, Don Norwood, and Bruce Valanche. You can pick up Brian's books at bookshop.org/shop/wordtheater/. And if you're anywhere near Los Angeles on Thursday, June 1st, meet us at the Grammy Museum at LA Live for what promises to be another unforgettable evening of all new selections of Brian Doyle's stories. If you haven't heard, 2023 marks the 20th anniversary of Word Theater, and we have many in-person events scheduled, which patrons and enthusiasts can access online from anywhere in the world, from the comfort of your homes. Just visit our website at wordtheater.org to see how you can support this podcast by becoming a Word Theater patron or enthusiast member. And don't forget, you'll be able to watch the entire Grammy show a week or so after the event from the comfort of your home if you are an enthusiast or patron member. That's all for this week. And if you like what you're hearing, please send an email to admin@wordtheatre.org. www.thebestpodcast.org. We'd love to get some feedback. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please write us a review and please tell your friends. Thanks for listening, everybody. Special thanks to Jonathan Sachs for composing our theme music. Thanks always to the Los Angeles County of Arts and Culture for their continuing support. And a big shout out to Jason Lee, our podcast editor. This is Cedaring Fox in Los Angeles. Hope to see you in person at the Grammy Museum. And do come say hello if you're there. Until next week, signing off.